Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Welcome back, poetry lovers. This is the fifth episode of Insta Poetic Justice. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. Today, I am joined by the poet Tricia Marie Ward. Hi, Tricia.
Hey!
Some of you may know Tricia on Instagram, aka Finch with a Pencil. As with each poet on this podcast, her info will be in the description box of this episode, so you can check out her latest works. We will start with an interview of Tricia and then go on to discuss our designated Insta poet of this episode, this time being Sabina Laura. So, are you ready, Tricia?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. So, first off, where are you from?
I am from the very warm state of California, and I'm in Los Angeles.
Of course. I grew up primarily in Oregon, but I was born in San Pedro in the county of Los Angeles.
Oh, right on. That's pretty close. It's such a pretty area, too.
It is. It's really great. So what are your hobbies outside of writing?
So outside of writing, I am an optician. That's my job, but I also enjoy studying it outside of work, which is study of glasses, of healthcare for the eye. I also play a lot of video games. That's something that definitely takes up a lot of my time. Video games or anime. Mm-hmm. See what else.
No, but I need to get you in touch with my husband. He has had such a hassle trying to get new prescription glasses. So if only he had you as his optometrist.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then what kind of video games do you like? I only ever played a couple, but I really liked like Legend of Zelda, specifically like Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword.
Those are definitely fun games. Yeah, I like adventure games like that. Currently, me and my friends are playing Final Fantasy XIV online. So we just do a lot of online games together since we can't really all meet up at the time. So we meet up in our little virtual world.
Yes. My sister did try and get me into Guild Wars, and I did play it for like a semester, like first semester of grad school before I had any friends, but it kind of died away from it. Although I do need to get into Guild Wars 2 because they have a lot more dragons and I love dragons.
Ooh, yes.
Anyway, so just typical question, what got you into writing, and do you just write poetry or do you do any other genres or stuff like that?
So my grandma was the one who got me into poetry and writing. She would kind of babysit me every day after school, and she'd always have me read a book every day. It was Junie B. Jones or any Judy Blume novels, and I enjoyed it so much that I liked making my own little comic books, and she would kind of give little reviews on it. And later on, I kind of got into poetry because I liked the whole short form and the expression of it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Go ahead.
Oh, that was it.
Oh, okay. All right, then. So I'm just curious, you know, a lot of people have these cutesy names that they figure out to be like their username on Instagram, but I just remember yours being especially unique, Finch with a Pencil. So what is the story behind that?
So growing up, my nickname was Finch, not because I'm obsessed with birds and I love studying them, but out of my friends, I was always the smallest one. I always kind of had a little bit of a higher pitch voice. So they just kind of collaborated and came up with Finch. So that was my name for a very long time. And with writing, yeah, my friend painted a picture for me that I asked to do a Finch with a Pencil. It was a little zebra finch holding a yellow number 2 pencil. And I was like, well, this is definitely the handle for me. It's definitely going to work out.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah, I don't see too many finches where I am. Like my favorite bird that I see around in Indiana is the red cardinal.
Oh, cute.
Yeah,
Very
they're
cute.
very beautiful. And we also got plenty of hummingbirds, and sometimes they're a hazard. Like, they'll fly into the house, and I have to go catch them and release them out again.
Oh, they're so clumsy.
Yeah, they're so cute. And I have to hide, and I have to get them before my two cats get it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Alrighties then. So let's see, what other questions do I have? When did you first consider yourself a writer?
Probably in middle school, we had this little writing contest to rewrite the ending to Tall Tale Heart by Edgar Allan
Ooh.
Poe. And I'm definitely a big Poe fan. So my story won. We got a piece of candy, it was just like, a classroom thing. But in that moment, I was like, this is something I want to pursue. And I definitely am a writer. It wasn't just a cute little thing I did with grandma. It's something I wanted to pursue.
Oh, that's nice. How did you change the ending of Telltale Heart?
So at the ending, I changed it to where the person that hid the man under the floorboards, I made him end up being Edgar Allan Poe. So he ran off to start his new life. I remember him saying at the end, this is the day and night that I start as my life as a writer, as Edgar Allan Poe. So I kind of made it seem like this was his intro story to him being who he was, which was pretty cool for a middle schooler to think of at the time.
No, that's good. No, I'm just curious because I too am an
Yeah.
Edgar Allan Poe fan, and I did actually discuss Telltale Heart with my
Oh,
via
cool.
my Gothic literature podcast.
Yeah, I saw that you're an Edgar Allan Poe fan. I was like, oh, this is gonna be great.
Yeah, so via Instagram, do you hear from your readers much, and what do they say?
I do. I've actually met some pretty sweet people along the way from the beginning when I first started posting. They're always leaving nice little comments or they'll message me. I think the sweetest message I got was if I ever were to self-publish or get published for a little poetry book, that they want to buy it. And that's, of course, the best thing to hear as a writer or as a poet. But it's always been very supportive things, saying like they relate to this, and which is kind of the biggest thing I enjoy as a poet is when people feel like they were heard or seen through my writing.
Oh, that's great. So since you've gotten such positive feedback, do you have any greater poetic ambitions beyond Instagram? Do you think that you will eventually, be it self-publishing or traditional, do you think you'll want to invest in an entire poetry collection within a book?
Definitely, that's definitely a goal. I did submit a little chapbook to Autumn House Publishing for their chapbook contest for
Ooh.
August. So, fingers crossed on that one. But self-publishing, since it's definitely more doable than I thought when I researched it through Barnes and Noble and other mediums, that's definitely something I want to do.
Yeah, no, that's what I do self-publishing with my poetry collections. If I ever get around to writing my novel, I may want to pursue traditional publishing just because a novel is a whole different animal with plot and pacing and all of those things. I would want much more eyes to make it even better.
Definitely.
But for poetry, which is very personal, I'm just screw it. I just want it there out in the world for me, and if people buy it, okay.
For sure.
So, do you believe insta-poetry is a gateway drug that will lead young people to potentially explore classical poetry?
I don't think so. A lot of these Insta poets that I read, they don't sound like, classic poetry, like Edgar Allan Poe or even like someone more modern like Robert Frost. I don't see too much of a connection. It would be great, if someone was like, this was inspired by this kind of classical poet and this classic literature. That would be great to kind of bring that into perspective. But from the poets I follow, I don't see too much of that, which is kind of disappointing.
No, I was just totally curious because there seems to be a lot of debate about this and a lot of ways that defenders of insta poetry are trying to justify the merits of insta poetry in a way that maybe the traditional poetry establishment will get behind, is to make the argument that this, just seeing, poetry on Instagram, if they see it long enough and see the merits of poetry, that maybe they'll pick up a book of more classical poetry and take the time to read it. I'm not sure exactly how I feel about that because I feel like I was the opposite. I kind of went in the opposite direction where I read classical poetry, and then I realized there was this whole world of like insta poetry, and I was really fascinated by how technology was being used to influence the poetry scene. And so for me it was the opposite effect, where I already had the love of poetry, and then I'm like, oh, this is just a new way we do poetry, not so much starting just with insta poetry and then that being the gateway to, you know, everything else.
Right. Yeah, same here. Started off with classic poetry and then kind of went from there.
Alrighty then. So what would you say to the poetry establishment that is hating on insta poetry?
Well, I definitely feel they should embrace it more, because that's where a majority of writers are going to be now. It's definitely one of the biggest mediums to use for writing, kind of getting it out there, because they're taking into consideration like something aesthetically pleasing and something lovely to read, or whether it's like heart-wrenching or heartwarming to read. They should definitely kind of delve more into it, because that's where most people of this generation go to, or honestly, they're on the most.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's definitely, you know, for the poetry establishment. And then what would you say to new poets trying to chase the Instagram algorithm? Because I think some of the critics of insta poetry is saying that it's artless in the way that people aren't thinking. They take the approach, or they take the position, that insta poetry, by the nature of its use via technology and trying to get as many followers as possible, that is corruptive of the creative process, and just people are only like chasing, you know, these little tidbits of fame via likes and, you know, retweets and whatever. So what would you say to new poets who haven't quite found themselves and are trying to chase that algorithm?
Well, honestly, I would just tell them to kind of treat Instagram as the journal that we would keep our poetry in. Like, growing up, this is a new way to have that journal and to have other hearts and eyes to read it. If you chase that algorithm, you're going to be spending more time on that than you will probably be writing, which is something I did in the beginning. I tried to figure out the whole Instagram algorithm, when to post, when to write, how active you have to be. And you kind of forget that whole reason why you're doing that art and writing. It's because you want someone else to read it. You want someone else to kind of relate to that writing. So I just say, treat it like that journal you had that whole time.
Yeah, because definitely, I think Insta poets kind of go through that phase,
yeah,
you know, a little.
We definitely do.
Yeah, I went through it a little, but quite honestly, nowadays my Instagram is less of a Insta poet and much more of a bookstagrammer, because I'm getting really into, you know, all my book podcasts, and I just launched a BookTube channel. So
right on.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So, thank you so much. Like, would you please read us, you know, some of the poems you chose?
Yeah, definitely. So I have one right here. It says, "Live in the wake of night, with arms stretched into all that is unseen. Reach for everything that made you swear on graves that this life wasn't for you. Remember, you are absolutely meant to be."
I'm so glad you picked that one, because that one I already have pulled up, you know, on my phone, on Instagram.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that definitely is one of my favorites of your more recent ones. I just especially love the imagery of, you know, swearing on graves that this life wasn't for you. So just contrasting, you know, life with, of course, graves, like, you know, the decomposition of life.
Exactly.
Yes. Alrighty. Would you like to read another one, please?
Sure. This one's from my sister. "Oh, little one, no, please. It's okay. You don't need to cry like that. The tears know those trails well. Let me walk it instead with you and grow daffodils. I can hear the self-precating haikus softly escaping those lips. Lips that say such important things. Don't you dare bring down the tower that you are for a world that doesn't see your constellations."
I like that one. But you know, when it started with little one, it made me think of the little finch with the pencil in his mouth. Like, the little finch is the little one.
Yeah. Yeah, my sister's definitely my little one.
Yeah. Alrighty then. And your third poem, please.
There. This one's a haiku. So, "What a gem you are. Even with the chips and dull shine, you are so lustrous."
Ooh, I like that one. Especially because I'm a I'm a sucker for, you know, gemstones and
oh, same here.
Yeah, no, it's just like one of the highlights when I finally like went to the Smithsonian Museum as a teenager. The best thing mm-hmm. I saw in the whole exhibit was like the Hope Diamond.
Oh wow, that's super
and
cool.
And I was just like, it's cursed, but I want it so bad.
Exactly. Makes you want even more.
Yeah. So Arden, thank you so much for those poems. And now we can move into talking about Sabina Laura. So again, finding some info on Sabina was a little bit of a challenge because, again, she is a newer poet onto the Instagram scene, but still doing quite well, has from 50 to 60,000 followers at this mm-hmm. at the time of this recording. But I did was able to find a little info about her, this little paragraph. Sabina has been an avid reader and writer since a young age, filling countless notepads with poems and stories, and going on to complete a degree in English language and linguistics. Oh, she's a linguistics nerd. I have my BA in linguistics too. Right, that's probably why I like her so much. She is the author of Moonflower, a collection of poetry and illustrations about growing even in darkness. She lives in the Cotswolds, United Kingdom, and loves music, drawing, nature, and playing the piano. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think what was interesting is, you know, I find a variety of poets through a variety of means, and several of my guests on the podcast so far have been from a very specific poetry anthology, mm-hmm. InstaPoet. And that was one of the rare instances where I was already a follower of Sabina Laura, just with all the poets that I followed. And then when I ordered that poetry anthology, I was looking at it, it's like, oh, these poets are so new and so great. I really love them. And then towards the end of the book, it's like Sabina Laura. It's like, oh, they put Sabina Laura in this anthology. Yay.
Aw, I love it.
Okay. Alrighty then, would you like to read one of the poems you chose for Sabina Laura and just say why you chose it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one I picked here is Always Me Kind. After all, most hearts are home to some kind of pain. And I picked that one as my first one in particular was, you know, kind of had a rough upbringing growing up. But with my grandma kind of being my saving grace, she always reminded me to be kind to people because you don't know what they're going through in life or what place they are in life. And a little bit of kindness can definitely make or break a person's day. So to kind of always smile and just, you know, be pleasant.
Yeah, I really like that message because, again, I'm also a big avid advocator for like always be kind because you don't know yeah. what specifically people are going through, and I would hate to be the reason that I even inadvertently was the reason that someone yeah. like felt really bad or just mm-hmm. you know gave up on life. Like that would make me feel horrible, so I just always try to be like, you know, just always be nice because you have no idea what the other person is going through. You know, mm-hmm. they could have a whole slew of issues you know nothing about.
Right.
Alrighty then, let me pull up Moonflower here. Let's see. I guess I'll do them in the order that they appear in the book, the ones I chose. Oh, here we go. Here's a good one. A haze of mist hides an autumn morning, diluting the summer heat. The changing leaves are falling crisp under my feet. Melting amber skies glisten like diamonds through each rust-colored tree in interwoven whispers crackling in the breeze. Autumn passes fast, the air now bitter, the sun lower in the sky, preparing for the winter. Everything must die.
I love the imagery in that one, especially the last sentence.
Yeah, no, I like her because, you know, she does a lot of very, you know, quote-unquote cliche themes, but the way she uses language, like the woman, you know, a haze of mist or, you know, melting amber skies, she just brings words together in a way that's, you know, even though it's a cliche, it's original enough and has its own twist that I can get behind it.
Yeah, definitely made me think of autumn and the feelings of it when the sun's kind of setting, that crispy feeling when you're walking home alone.
Yeah, and then rust colored trees, I think that's a mm-hmm. very, you know, kind of thinking a little outside the box and thinking of, you know, how do you describe all the red and orange leaves.
Exactly.
So, all right, would you like to recite another one, please?
Yeah. So for this one is, why do you care so much about what people think? The storm does not worry about where its rain might fall. It will simply let go. And this is something I feel a lot of us can relate to because some of us are a little bit more people pleasing or just worry a little too much about what everyone else thinks of them. In a sense, you just might end up breaking yourself when you really should just be more open. Let it go. Like she said in the last line, just let it go.
Oh, the Elsa and Frozen.
I didn't even let think of that. Go. Yeah. I used to work in Disneyland at the time Frozen came out, so all my coworkers were definitely singing that song, or it was always playing on the radio at work.
Ironically, that's not my favorite song in Frozen. Like, For the First Time in Forever is my favorite.
That's a good one. And Love's an Open Door, because I'm cheesy and romantic.
Yeah, I like, and then of course, Fixer Upper with the trolls. Yep. Alrighty then let me move on to one of the ones I had. He was on page 45. Let's see. Aha. Like a dandelion, my dreams get carried away by the breeze, and I try to catch them all at once, but I have been grasping with the tips of my fingers, not knowing how to hold anything completely.
She has a reoccurring thing with kind of letting go or...
Yes, kind of sort of going. A surrender of sorts.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I like this because that concept of when you chase too many things, you end up with nothing.
Exactly.
And, you know, this is a reoccurring theme that my husband and I talk about, whether it's in people in relationships or whatever. It's just so much of people approach life with this, like, market mentality where they have so many options. And by having so many options, they appreciate nothing.
Absolutely. So you just can't really put your focus or passions. They're all divided up, and then you are left with nothing.
All right, then. How about your next poem, please?
Cool. I like this one a lot because I see I'm also a lot of people write this theme about loving a poet or how to be a poet. So I really like that she did that same theme. So how to be a poet. 1, let yourself hurt and heal in the same breath. 2, pour salt over your wounds and feel them burn. 3, kiss your wounds better and bandage them up. 4, know that words are both the salt and the bandage.
Yeah, no, I really like that because it shows in sort of the healing process, you can't just skip over the more unpleasant aspects like the salt and everything.
Exactly, yeah. And also when you're writing, I read this somewhere, it's like you're bleeding or you're breathing, you know, when you're finally getting all that words out on paper or on a computer, however you express yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then, I was going to say something else, but I forgot.
It's all good.
Alrighty then, where was my next? The next one I had was on page 52 of my book, and this one is accompanied by a picture of an eclipse.
Hmm.
And sometimes I want to disappear in an eclipse and hide behind the moon, like a sun afraid of her own light. But I have always found it hard to believe I could be more than just a shadow in the night.
Aww.
Again, kind of cliche ideas, but she does it in such a unique sort of writing style and word choice. I think the word choice is the biggest thing that I like about her.
Yeah, because we all have written about the moon at least once or kind of wanting to hide away, but the way she presents it, it's something that everyone can relate to in this, and the ending, it's simply sweet.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, what do you think of poems that are not titled? Because literally, I'm skimming through the book right now, and very few of them are titled. What's your position on that?
I'm definitely one of those writers. Very few of my poems are titled. To be honest, I like not titling my poems because then I feel when I do that, it just kind of boxes in what the reader is already going to think about the poem. So I rather than read the poem as it is and they can interpret it from the first line as the title or however they feel would be the theme from there.
So you like to give a little more, you know, leg room, if you will, of the reader interpreting something that might not necessarily be what you immediately thought of when you were writing it.
Exactly.
My last poet that I interviewed was of a similar mindset. I tend to be more, not that people can't, not that I would be displeased if someone took away something else from my poetry, but I always title them. I do have a very specific point that I'm trying to convey.
Now, I know some poets, when they title their poems, it's either like very literal, or some of them do it very ambiguous. How do you title your poems? Are they very literal or just out there?
It can range from being very literal to being like a specific line within the poem, or it could mm-hmm. be, or I can make the effort to try to use words in the title that are not used in the poem at all in the stanzas, but still have a thematic correlation.
Cool.
So like I'm kind of all over the place with my titles.
No, that's
but,
good.
But I do majority of the time, yes, my poems tend to mostly have titles.
Very cool.
All right, then. Next poem, please.
Yeah. We have How Beautifully Fragile We Are, Though We Accept Pain When We Think We Deserve It and Let It Break Us Silently. So another one I definitely relate to. I was right. I'm Filipino, and we're raised traditionally to be very reserved about our feelings and not to express them too much. So it's funny I ended up being a poet.
Yeah.
So when I read this, I felt like she was kind of writing it to me in a sense. So one of those.
Well, that is a, you know, not that there aren't, you know, male poets and, you know, other, you know, diverse elements within the Insta poetry scene. But I think a big talking point about the phenomenon of Insta poetry is how it's written by and caters to, a lot of the time, women of color, like women from mm-hmm. more traditional societies, where, again, like you said, sometimes, you know, being very, very reserved about one's feelings is culturally ingrained, or if not specifically that, maybe the idea of just talking about really sensitive issues is culturally ingrained, like you don't talk about it because that might bring shame to the family or community or whatever.
Exactly. So it's good to grow out of it and just being okay to talk about our feelings, because breaking in silence is probably the loudest thing that you'll ever experience.
All righty then. Get me. My next one was page 95. Oh, yeah. Here it is. I leave fingerprints on windows as I chase raindrops and footprints in the snow on winter mornings. I leave city lights in rearview mirrors and memories inked in journals telling stories of all the summers that stole my heart, at least for a little while. I leave a fold in all the pages of my story. I want to revisit someday and a key under the mat, hoping someone will come back to collect it. Because the truth is, I often leave a part of me behind, never knowing if I might return, but that way I can promise you will always know where to find me.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I really like that one, especially just the memories inked in journals. Again, just outwardly seems very simple, but I just think it's so good.
Yeah, it's very sweet. Definitely the whole feel of summer love, kind of fleeting.
Yeah, summer love, and specifically the memory of summer love. Mm-hmm.
We've all been there.
Yes, of course.
Cool.
All right, then. Do you have one more poem from Spina
yes.
Laura?
Cool. And this one. I want to live in a world where nobody's afraid to fall in love. Or admit it, and let love grow like wildflowers in the most unexpected but beautiful places. I liked in this one she put parentheses around "but beautiful places," so you can read it with unexpected places or beautiful, but I love the fact that it's in there, so it's almost like two different poems.
Oh, yeah, no, I liked that because, again, just the overall message behind it, that I feel like a lot in modern dating, it's a huge competition of just showing how little you care, because you're trying to act like such a badass that, I'm invincible, or I don't care. Like, I can be so blasé. I can face the world on my own, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good to be romantic.
I know. Alrighty then. So I've got my last one that I picked, which is on page 105. Yes, this is accompanied by a picture with a crescent moon held in the palm of a hand.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to paint the sky and walk across the sea, hold the moon in my hands, and believe I am free. Again, it's so simple, but it speaks to me so much.
Yeah.
Like, I think just the combo of painting the sky and then walking across the sea.
Honestly, simplicity is the most powerful way in words.
Yeah, because she certainly isn't the first by any means to do that sort of contrast.
Yeah.
The inversion of the sky and the sea that's been around in literature since the dawn of time.
Oh, absolutely. It was probably our first love in writing, kind
of
looking up as we daydream and write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I am such a sucker for, you know, those who rely on like flowers and like the moon mm-hmm. for their imagery that just, you know, as a pagan, I just love that so much.
Absolutely. Or just like spiritual aspects of all that in nature, especially mm-hmm. the night part. Writing about night is the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially like the page that this poem, like most of the pages in the book are white, but this one specifically is black with white font.
Oh, that's really cool. I really need to get her book, actually.
Yeah, no, get the book. It's really sweet. Alrighty then. So that wraps up, you know, our special selection of poems by Sabina Laura. And now we'll move on to the criticism section. And it'll be a little different because, you know, as our listeners all know, I typically find a like one-star review or an article that and read a few paragraphs about that specific poet and why they're criticizing them. But because mm-hmm. Sabina Laura is so very new at this point, I was only able to find a very brief two-star review on her debut collection, Moonflower. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Let's start with that. So this one... Well, it already says a lot by the person's like username on Amazon, Mean Bean PL.
Oh.
That was their name. And I'm just like, what? Is that one of those persons that just goes around giving crappy reviews?
It sounds like it. It's like a full-time like, job.
Yeah, it's not very promising just by the username name. So they gave it 2 stars, and this is the only 2-star review. Of yeah, Moonflower at this point. And I believe there are like, at the time of this recording, like 18 reviews of Moonflower right now. Because again, it's fairly new. Mm-hmm. So Mean Bean says, I can't get over that name. Good imagery, but repetition more than motif. Surface level, not provocative enough. Too safe, too weak. Felt like I was reading high school poetry.
Wow, Mean Bean.
Yeah. Yeah, I wholeheartedly disagree with Mean Bean because she does do like pretty common themes, but again, her language, and I wouldn't even say her language is particularly complex, but again, the way she just weaves the imagery in very simple ways, I really like that. And in some ways, like the haze of mist, like mm-hmm. using like prepositional phrases like that, it kind of reminds me of maybe my own style, which is maybe why I like it so much.
Yeah,
but totally. I would definitely not put her in the sort of like, oh, stereotypical insta poetry is so simple and so simplistic. So what do you think about that review?
Well, I very much disagree with Mean Bean as well. It definitely doesn't have that high school feel. I believe that's the comment they mentioned. It's definitely not high school poetry. I would have loved to have read poetry like this in high school. I mean, I love the classic stuff, but this was definitely something, like you said, this is kind of similar to my style. I relate to it. You know, nature, all that pretty stuff. It is a little simplistic, but sometimes that's the best way to get your point across. I mean, I feel him saying provocative, which is an interesting word because I don't feel poetry needs to, in a sense, be provocative all the time. Sometimes it's just nice to go with the flow.
Yeah. Well, I think that's tying into a lot of, mm-hmm. I forget who said it. There's that famous quote that, you know, creativity that enforces your pre-existing beliefs, like that's entertainment. And then like creativity that challenges your beliefs, that is art. Like something of that effect. And I feel like he's like going in that.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. And I think that's a big tenet of why people dislike insta poetry, because it's reiterating certain certain concepts and certain themes and motifs rather than quote unquote like being an intellectual challenge. Although again, I would dispute that this Sabina Laura, like the poems I read, I felt those were like challenging, like even if the message seemed pretty clear, just, you know, the imagery that she uses and the metaphors, I felt those were, you know, challenging enough.
Exactly. Especially that poem about fall that you read. That's probably my favorite one that she's written so far.
Yeah. Yeah, and it says it's a talent in and of itself to, again, rely on a, you know, age-old concept, but mm-hmm. to twist it in a way that still makes it valuable and beautiful and worth reading.
Yeah, and to be able to touch so many people of different lives, to be like, wow, she sees me.
Okay, so again, I would usually read a, you know, an interview from Amazon and then like an article criticizing that specific poet. But because, as I said, Sabina Laura is so new, I actually I found a more general article criticizing Insta poetry that was, it's a pretty recent one because people have been dissing on Insta poetry since like 2014, since mm-hmm. Ruby Kaur, I think, published Milk and Honey, but I digress. So yeah, this article was by Thomas Hogkinson from The Spectator, and it was written in November 2019, so about almost a year ago. So let's see, here is what he had to say about Insta poetry. Here's a few paragraphs. Of all the fans I spoke to, he's referring to fans of Insta poetry, none mm-hmm. mentioned the style of writing. The focus was all on how the content made them feel. This is key to the appeal. Not all Insta poetry is aimed at women, but a lot is. Not all Insta poetry is designed to tell the reader the thing they'd most like to hear, but a lot is. And it turns out that is what a lot of women want to hear, is that they are wild and could be fittingly be compared to fire. Now I'm back ragged and ravaged by my research from the Insta field and bearing this tattered scrap of a conclusion. At least half of what passes for Insta poetry is motivational. It's designed to tell readers that they are precious, that the pain will pass, that there is somebody out there for everyone. It's designed, in other words, to make you feel better. There are now three kinds of poetry: printed poetry, performance poetry, and Insta poetry. The third of these is in its infancy, to say the least. Instagram isn't yet 10 years old. It doesn't have a driver's license. It can't get married. It may not yet buy alcohol. One thing, though, is clear, and that's that it shouldn't be judged by the same criteria as its older relatives. So what are your thoughts on his criticism?
Well, I do agree that when people read this, I'm one of them, you do feel better reading these things, or these are things that you want to hear. It's such an easy access to look up a poem, like a love poem, self-help poem, mental awareness poem. You read it, feel better. I didn't even know Instagram wasn't even 10 years old yet, but I like that reference. He said it's in the infancy stage, but because technology has definitely boomed, I feel writers kind of just took this and ran with it. So I feel we can be judged on that same criteria as printed books, because this is what we have now. It's not like we write a poem, we send it out to the newspaper in hopes that it would be published from there.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point you made, that because technology advances exponentially, even though mm-hmm. it's only 10 years old, like, it does advance and age in a way that, again, printed poetry didn't. And in exactly. fact, you know, poetry was, like, pretty stagnant for, like, a century yeah. until Insta poetry came onto the scene.
Yeah, because, like, most poets... Sorry, Poe, you weren't really famous until something, like, if you died or something drastic happened to them, then 100 years later, their poetry was, you know, known. There's a lot of younger poets out there that are really getting out there, like Sabina, even mm-hmm. though she only has about 60,000 followers. That's a lot compared to, like, a century ago, like you mentioned.
Yeah, so there's that part of, you know, discussing the age of Insta poetry. But going back to the first paragraph I read, like, I would question this pool. Like, I don't have time to read the whole article, but I read sure. some of the rest of the article, and it's a guy who's already coming at Insta poetry from, even though it's curious, it's still from a position of, like, scathing mockery.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, he asked a few people and he, like, quotes them, but I would question, you know, he's like, of all the fans I spoke to, none mentioned the style of writing. So I wonder if that's, like, a deliberate choice to, you know, pick people who, you know, don't go that deep into the analysis of it, because I, you know, I'm not going to lie that a lot of Insta poetry, you know, is fluffy and tries to make you feel good, but that doesn't mean it's deprived of like writing complexity. Because again, for as simple in some ways that Sabina Laura is, I feel like her imagery is a little bit more sophisticated than maybe some of the other Insta poets. Like just last episode, my guest and I were ripping apart Cleo Wade because she has none of the type of metaphors and imagery that Sabina Laura has.
Right.
So, and there's a way that, I don't know if this is just me, I'm on a real feminist kick lately. To me, like, this guy seemed almost a little bit sexist.
Yeah, when you mentioned it's like mostly towards women, I was like, sounds a little...
And it turns out that a lot of women want to hear that they're wild and could be fittingly compared to fire. I feel that was a little bit patronizing.
Just a little, yeah.
Yeah, I just not... too. And not going into the depth of why do women,
right,
you know, relate to that and want to feel that way, because, you know, they've been repressed for centuries and thousands of years, and we're only finally getting a little bit of our voices heard and, you know, whatever. So I just felt like he treated that very flippantly.
He definitely did.
Yeah. So any other thoughts?
You pretty much said what I was already thinking on that last one there. That's pretty much it for me.
Yep. Alrighty then. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And now we're going to move on to our last exercise of the day, hashtag InstaPoetry. So do you have your phone ready, Trisha?
I do.
Alrighty then. So what you want to do is go to Instagram and search for the InstaPoetry tag. And what's important is not just to view the top InstaPoetry, also click on the recent ones.
For sure.
So here... First one is not in English, so I cannot read that one.
It's okay.
Oh, here's one I just found at random. The username is silentpoetry.27. Love and blood are so similar. Both are red, both give life and also leave you dead. Ooh, I like that one.
Nice.
Yeah, so simple, but again, like imagery has kind of been used before, but I still feel like it's different. No one... Like, it both gives life and leaves you for dead. That's good. I'm going to follow them.
It's actually how I found some really cool people was through the InstaPoetry tag.
It's the best way. All right, yeah. Do you want to read one that you found?
Sure. I have one here. It says, Cuckoo Clock by Casa Bassa. When life was so overwhelmed, she lost the sense of time. Then she heard his voice whispering, I love you. That restored her sense of reality. Those I love yous filled her with mechanical rhythm, day and night. That led her to lose her sense of self. She wondered, why wasn't I love you enough? In her struggling psyche, she failed to notice what he really was. Ooh, I like that one.
Why do you like that one?
Definitely something I can relate to. You start to wonder if words are enough, even though that's definitely my love language. Words of affirmation and time spent. You can only say so many love yous. Yeah, I feel like most writers might fall into that, the words of affirmation or time spent or quality time. I forgot which one it was under. But it's that last line, why wasn't I love you enough? When it's supposed to be the most powerful thing, but if anything, we say I love you to almost anything, whether people or things. So it's going to take more than that sometimes to show how you feel about someone.
Yeah, I liked when she started like the mechanical
rhythm.
Yeah, mechanical rhythm, but like expressing the monotony of the I love yous. Like I just would have liked to have had a little bit more of like, you know, word choice like that. I felt like it was a little simple towards the end.
Definitely. There's like a few lines in there that kind of stuck out.
Okay, let me try and find one now. Okay. This one by Sad Boy Mark 2019.
I like it already.
Well, that's his username. I sit here thinking about how nice it would be to talk to you, to really talk to you, if you could just be you for a moment, instead of a hollow vessel searching for yourself in a solo cup. I'm not crazy about that one.
Yeah, it's the whole walking alone thing. It's okay.
Yeah. Not my cup of tea, really. So, here, you choose one now.
Let's see, I'll refresh the page. Cool. This one is from Murr's Words. I just want to be happy and revel in this moment, in this realization, in this feeling. It's a very...
That's it?
it's very common. I feel like I've read something like this before, and these are the ones.
A thousand times.
Yeah, and these are the ones that I see with usually like 50,000 likes or something. But it appeals to the audience. But I feel like I've read this before.
Yeah, it's I think, you know, there is that genuine debate to be had about what is poetry and what is an inspirational quote.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that makes me think of, I remember, you know, back in 2014, I was in grad school. And again, I'm sure I knew nothing of the Insta poetry thing. All I remember is like scrolling through Facebook and seeing this article about like why people hated like inspirational quotes. And I just remember thinking like, why are people hating on these cute little things on Facebook? Like, you have to be really jaded and really like have a lot going on in your life to be offended by a little cutesy picture on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And I feel like it's the same mentality for, you know, Insta poetry, because a lot of it is sort of inspirational quotey like.
It is,
and so
yeah.
Like people are like, just die.
No, definitely. It's just, you're right. It's just like these cute little blurbs of something, and people are like, oh, this sucks. And they spend more words explaining why they don't like it versus the little amount of words in the quote themselves.
Right. Here's a short one. In the universe of dreams, she drools over the moons and chases the stars. Ooh, I like that. It's short, but drools over the moon. Again, using the moon, but also using mm-hmm. words and imagery that is slightly different, giving one's own twist on the matter.
Exactly. And I feel the word drool would be hard to use in like a sweet poem like that, especially about the moon.
Alrighty then. Yeah, you pick one.
That one, English. I'm kind of scrolling through ones that seem like quotes versus a poem. Okay, so this one is from Balakov's poetry. Love fades, as I told, as it came. Unexpectedly, I will be contemplating time with nothing in my pockets. Lost, I chose. Now it's just time to see.
What do you think about that one?
It's definitely an approach to kind of letting go. Kind of like, I've got nothing to lose after this relationship kind of feel. Where she talks about contemplating time with nothing in my pockets. Lost, I chose.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she or they probably chose to end that relationship or whatever. She's kind of referencing, kind of walking it alone from there.
Nice. Here, I will read one more. Oh, guess I found one by Sabina Laura.
Oh, cool.
Which is... Or wait, no, that's in the top. Never mind. That I need. Oh. I want recent. Damn it. Ooh, here's it. The title intrigues me of this one. Deranged Dreams.
Nice.
Yeah, by The Broken Guy 03.
I like where this is going from name
there's
to title.
There's difference between like tragically romantic and emo.
Yeah, we're all a little emo inside.
Yeah. So, all right then. Why do you always knock in my dreams, smiling and talking, enchanting me? My mind wants to forget all these, but my heart wants to keep it the way it is. Maybe I should have locked when you knocked, or enact my absence, refraining to open the door. Sleep is the only way to run from your thoughts. Why pester me there, showing up? I bang my head on the wall, thinking how to escape from you while awake and asleep. I like that.
I like that too, especially the ending.
Yeah, no, just, it's certainly a concept I've heard before, like being haunted in one's dreams by a particular person or a particular dilemma,
for sure.
And just, yeah, just you, even the frantic knocking in my dreams.
Yeah.
You know, quite, we were talking about Poe, it made me think of the raven, the knocking at my chamber door.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I actually have, like, the raven printed on a blanket. It was my housewarming gift for my sister, so I always see it when I wake up. It's the whole poem of the raven.
The entire poem, or just a like an expert of it?
It's the entire poem. It's pretty amazing.
How big is that blanket?
It's a pretty big blanket. It's probably like a king sized blanket, and the font, it's small, but it's not too small where you can't read it. I'll definitely send a picture of it to you.
would absolutely love it.
I would love that. Thank you. I'm just thinking, and the raven still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, and his eyes are gleaming, and his eyes have all the gleaming of a demon that is dreaming, and his lamplight throws his shadow on the floor, and my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Love you, Poe, forever.
Alrighty then, and that concludes our fifth episode of Insta Poetic Justice. Thank you so much for joining us, Trisha.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and make sure to check out Trisha at Finch with a Pencil. And make sure to tune in next time where we will tackle another Insta Poetry giant with another poet. Bye.
Bye.